Welcome to It's Personal, Finance Canada. I'm Christine Conway.
And I'm Cameron Conway.
And this podcast is a very personal look at personal finance in Canada. Welcome to It's Personal, Finance Canada. I'm Christine Conway, here with Cameron Conway. And this week, we're going to talk about hiring a financial planner.
Oh, that's right. So Christine talks a lot about how she is a certified financial planner and the different work she does. So we want to talk today about what it means to go out and find someone like that that can help you with your own sort of goals and plan retirement, what to look out for, what's good, what's not, how everyone benefits, how a client benefits, how the planner gets paid, and how they can really help you out in the long run.
Well, that's right. I mean, I'll tell you, this conversation kind of came out of our own, looking at our own business model and structuring both our fee-for-service line and our services that generate commission and trying to see how they all fit together more cohesively and actually putting that in one place where we can point at it and say, yes, you know what, this is what we want to do as a company. But as we were kind of doing our research and saying, okay, hey, what's everyone else doing? It is the absolute Wild West out there. And that's from pricing, types of services offered, specializations. So I figured, you know what? Financial planning, financial planners, and I mean, this is a huge conversation that's taking place in Ontario and beyond, kind of across Canada right now about who we are, how we're regulated, what we can actually do for you. I think for someone that is saying, you know what? Yes, I do want some kind of advice. There's certain areas of financial planning that I need help in. This is for you today. This is to kind of look at areas like how to pick a financial planner, how they're getting paid and how you would want to compensate them, what's in your best interest, and also what you'd actually get for it. So we are going to kind of go through all of that today. So you kind of get to see behind the curtains. We are going to pull it back. We are going to put on our business owner hats today, and we're going to talk you through what's happening in the mind of the person on the other side of the table when you're meeting your financial planner for the first time.
Yeah, and I guess also personally for me too, kind of think about this stuff. We are also thinking about this because we just got all of our bills from our accountant for this year, all our personal, all our corp. And you think to yourself, we're paying X amount for this amount of service and this kind of amount of long-term or short-term benefit and how that translates over to us as well. And yeah, it just kind of gets the ball rolling and figure out where do you get the most kind of value for money with this kind of stuff?
Well, that's right. And I would say right off the bat, kind of the most important thing to do as a person going out there looking for advice is really dialing down on specifically the type of advice that you want, because there are all kinds, like we're saying. And I mean, even when we were doing our research on this, just to kind of see what's out there, even at a government level, if you look on the federal government's website, they're making distinctions between financial advisors and financial planners. And you kind of go, wait, what? Aren't they the same thing? Well, no, they're not. With a financial advisor, they're looking at someone that can help you manage money. That could be someone from a financial institution, an insurance agent, a broker. Whereas a planner is someone that is going to be helping you reach some goals. So this is specific targets that you and your planner are going to set together. That could be budgeting, that could be retirement planning, that could be estate planning. But the bottom line is, one is very much focused on product or something that you purchase, whether it's a fund or an insurance product. And the other one is very much focused on lifestyle and goals and achieving objectives. And they can be the same person. I mean, for us, we certainly think we're both, but it is not always the same person. So understanding some of the designations that we bring to the table and some of the specializations that we bring is a good starting point for this.
Yeah, I guess one way you can really like oversimplify the difference between a financial planner and a financial advisor is a financial planner is more like a doctor and a financial advisor is more like a nurse or a paramedic.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. Sure. One is going to diagnose and choose the method of treatment for whatever ails you, I suppose. And the other one is the person on the floor actually administering it. So actually giving you the medication that you need or providing whatever it is you need to get better. Neat analogy. Hadn't thought of that one before. So let's start really broad-based with designations, because this is where people start to get confused. So I personally, I have a number of designations: certified financial planner, chartered life underwriter, certified health insurance specialist, certified exit planner, as well as a bachelor's degree and some other stuff. Really, instead of doing a master's, I just loaded up on all the industry designations that I thought would help us over the long term. But like I said, this can be a big point of confusion because there is a lot out there. And I'm just going to speak really quickly to the most common ones. So certified financial planner is the one that you'll hear quite a bit, right? This is from FP Canada. And that is an organization that holds all of its members to a pretty high standard in terms of licensing requirements, continuing educations. We can get disciplined if we do things wrong. There's all kinds of metrics in there to make sure that someone who holds those initials is meeting the standard that is laid out in that particular organization, in that particular body. A lesser designation that has been offered by FP Canada is called the Qualified Associate Financial Planner, or QAFP. Less easy to say than Certified Financial Planner, but that one is kind of like a stepping stone. So you're wanting to be a full financial planner, or maybe you're not, but you're on your way and you've completed some core classes that will help you help people reach some goals, but you're not yet all the way to a full certified financial planner.
Yeah, years ago, this was just considered like you have like your level one going towards your CFP designation, but FP Canada decided to kind of make it its own little mini designation to show that someone is on the way there, but they're still not a full financial planner. So this is essentially like an apprentice, if you want to look at it that way.
But still qualified to a certain extent, right? Better than the person off the street, better than someone that just has a license to sell product. They've actually done some work on the financial planning side of it.
Yeah, the same thing you see in trades. You have the apprentice working with the journeyman and they're on their way to become a journeyman. It's the same thing except in the financial services.
Yeah. And I mean, outside of FP Canada, there are other bodies that offer designations as well. Another big one out there is the Personal Financial Planner, PFP. That's from the Canadian Securities Institute. And that one has, that is one that's well respected as well. And the Institute of Advanced Financial Planners, IAFP, they offer the Registered Financial Planner. Now, typically, someone wanting to get into this type of work, I mean, I personally feel that FP Canada, this is the gold standard. That's why I went for that one. But these are all good and recognized designations. And that means that the people that have completed them have hit a certain standard of education. And these things, we all have to kind of file annually to make sure that we're still in good standing. And that's something that you can check out as well, right? Just to make sure not only that the person that you're hiring is licensed if you do want to get a product from them, but also that they are with some kind of governing agency or some kind of regulatory organization.
Yeah, and what also happens too, that you will have like multiple layers of this. So you could have your regulators through FP Canada. You could have another regulator, like not sort of regular, but another industry body like Advocus. Then you have like your provincial life licenses. So a lot of these people could have like multiple layers of like regulators and just continuing education requirements, quality and ethics requirements to kind of make sure everything is being done properly.
Right. And the big word that everybody likes to throw around in this kind of conversation is fiduciary, right? Are we required to act in your best interest? And truly, in a lot of cases, by completing this type of designation, we've most likely had to sign some kind of agreement that's putting us in this criteria. The banks, I know they have their kind of own ways of doing things as well. So I'm not going to kind of speak to the designations that may or may not be available there or what standard they're going to have at that point. Because honestly, I'm in the independent channel, so I'm less familiar kind of on a day-to-day basis of how that works. So once you've kind of narrowed it down to the type of financial planning professional that you want, really it's making sure that the services that you're looking for align with their specializations. Because in the big wide world that is financial planning, we really have to narrow down. And anyone that's good in any particular field, they're going to specialize, right? Like they're going to get really, really, really good at one or two or three things. So for myself personally, retirement planning, estate planning, and health insurance, so living benefits, disability, critical illness, life insurance, those have kind of been my specialties, my focuses. But others might have other designations, like there might be someone that specializes in people going through divorce. There might be someone that is a CFA and is more focused on investments and just picking that right one for you. So aligning areas of interest with what your planner is really, really, really good at and does every day is going to be really beneficial, because as we transition into talking about how you're going to pay them, the less time they have to spend figuring things out. Like if I do this every day, it's going to come easy to me and it's going to cost you less money. And if I'm a generalist and I'm trying to figure something out for you because it's not an area that I generally practice in, that could get a bit more expensive for you if you're going the fee-for-service route. And it could just generally be a misalignment in terms of services offered.
Yeah, again, you can kind of go back to the doctor analogy where you can have like a GP family practitioner, you can have a surgeon and the like. It's different people have different things they specialize in because that's just really what interests them, because it's a bit of a wide gambit here with like developing financial plans and stuff for people. But some people will just prefer to do certain things, or that's just the demand they get. So you do have to expect some variation kind of planner to planner and what they enjoy doing the most.
Yeah, and it's just this idea that while we all may meet a same base level of qualification, not are all created equal, right? And how you spend your time in practice is really going to determine what you're good at. So now we're going to move on to the second big criteria of what you're going to want to look at when you're choosing your financial planner, and that's how you're going to pay them.
I would say my criteria was who can give me a 30% return.
Wait a second. We are not. We actually cannot. We're talking about fiduciary duties and responsibilities to our industry. We actually cannot. You are offside if you promise someone a rate of return. So if any broker anywhere does that and tells you, yeah, you're getting a guaranteed, what did you say, 30%? My God, you are crushing it, Cam. That is a load of BS. Absolutely.
Okay. Can I have an 8% GIC then?
Well, are we in the 70s? Are we in the 80s? What decade are we in here? Let's travel back in time, get my time machine, and I'll see what I can get for you. I mean, we have all seen those double-digit GICs from back in the day, but yes, they were a while ago. They were a few years ago.
I just bring that up because we have had some people come through the office lately thinking that GIC rates are going back up right now when they're definitely not. And yeah, anything north of 5% is hard, very hard to find right now. So.
Absolutely, right? Going for those risk-free returns. Can we even say that and be compliant? Oh my goodness.
So it's a GIC.
It's GIC. You're good. Not a mutual fund, not a seg fund. All right. So let's look at this other big decision point that you are going to have to make around how you are going to pay your financial planner, because this matters. And it's so funny to watch how narratives play out in the media. It's so funny as people kind of became more and more aware of the costs of investments. So I'm going to talk for a minute about investments, MERs, management expense ratios on funds, things like that. People suddenly, they're like, oh, we've never really fully maybe understood this before. Our eyes are now opened and we don't really want to pay high fees, right? I mean, there is no shortage. There's a barrage of commercials and advertising and all kinds of messaging out there right now where high fees are bad. And of course, that's very intuitive. No one wants to pay more than they have to. But what's missing is the alignment with the services that you're going to receive. So yes, high fees in the context of you're getting nothing else and you're just paying a high MER from someone that is not actively planning for you, is not actively helping you reach your goals, has not specifically listed out the services that you're going to receive for those fees. Absolutely, that's a bit of a hot nightmare. And I don't blame people for getting angry about that. But this whole conversation about fee for service, when you look at stripping out the cost of advice and just offering that, and if I'm looking at it as a planner and as a business owner and as someone that has to take on a certain liability every time I hang my hat on a financial plan with some calculations that I've run and with no guarantee that this person who's paying me is going to want to talk to me next year or the following year or in 5 or 10 or 20 years to see how their plan is actually playing out, that's a bit of a risk, right? So there is some pricing for that put in. And the fact that when you hire a fee-for-service planner, it is very much a transactional agreement. They are going to create this plan. They are going to give you steps A, B, C, D, and they are not going to implement it for you in a lot of cases. So the best metric that I've found is when they work together. And so in our practice, we have some element of fee-for-service, and we have some element of, yes, we can do this if you purchase the funds or the whatever through our office, funds or insurance usually. But when we look at pure costs, I mean, Cam and I were kind of looking up some of the more popular or larger fee-only organizations that we're aware of anyways in Canada. And we also found an article from this year from the Toronto Star that did a pricing range for fee-for-service, so advice-only advisors. And it went everywhere from $1,200 on the low end for a basic plan. Don't know if that involved, I didn't think that even included retirement planning. And then $8,500 per plan for kind of a more inclusive, you know, all in, okay, do everything for me. Let's see it all. Let's put it on the table. And if you're kind of the average person walking into a financial planning office that says, yes, I acknowledge that I need advice. I need some help in this one area or these two areas. And someone says, great, that'll be $8,500. Most people will not purchase that advice, right? They're going to walk out the door as fast as they walked in, and no one has benefited from that transaction because the planner can provide that service. They're trained, they know what to do, but the price becomes that barrier to entry. So you're essentially setting a relationship up that, number one, there's no monitoring of the outcomes, there's no active achievement of the outcomes, there's no working together on goals, and there's also a really big upfront price tag.
Yeah, well, a crude way to look at it is, it's like going to buy a pizza. You go buy a pizza, they cook it, you walk out the door, and they don't care what you do with it. That's what a lot of fee-for-service can turn into without follow-up. But I guess another thing Christine kind of touched on a little bit was, often it's the people who need this the most that can't afford the fee-for-service. Because a couple of years ago, that was the big debate of making possibly all financial planners go fee-for-service only. But a lot of the pushback came back that this would just put these services outside the reach of a lot of the average people. But at the same time, you have to counterbalance this to like what you would pay an accountant. What would you pay a lawyer for similar services? And financial planners with their full slate of designations are equal to CPAs and some lawyers in this case. So that shows justification for costs, where this is much different than like your wealth advisor bank teller who hasn't gone through the same amount of training, regulation, and so forth.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're really looking at it as a professional service, right? From a qualified individual. And like you said, you wouldn't want cheap legal advice. You wouldn't want cheap accounting advice.
Well, even my chiropractor, it's $70 for 20 minutes.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Tattoo artists, some are $250 an hour. Don't ask how I know that.
But it just gives a bit of context to what you'll see some financial planners charge. Yes, some will be dirt cheap, some will be ridiculously expensive, but we're trying to kind of find the middle ground of what is fair, and especially when compared against other similar industries.
Yeah, so any professional who has had to go fee-for-service has to build in all these costs. Cost of maintaining their office and their staff, cost of liability if something goes wrong, cost of their own professional development and designation maintenance, cost of servicing, time to service each individual client. Like, there is a lot when you look at it from the other side of the table that kind of goes into it. But I mean, for yourself, you're more concerned about the services that you're going to receive, right? So let's talk for a minute about the other side of the equation and what's happening there. So Cam had alluded to this thing in the industry where the people with the least amount of money are getting the least amount of service. And I mean, it does make sense they're paying the lowest fee. But at the same time, we're seeing more and more organizations out there that start with an asset minimum to have any kind of financial planning done. I mean, when we were looking at that Toronto Star article, they had made note in there that CIBC and TD, if they wanted basic financial planning, there was a minimum $100,000 of investable assets required to even access those services. So anything less than $100,000 didn't even get your foot in the door, didn't even get you noticed. And I mean, I've had clients come in from the bank, or potential clients come in from the bank with some of these asset reports from the bank and some of these quote unquote attempts at financial plans from the bank. And some of them are like, I would never put my name on it. They're hilariously bad. But the people who receive them don't know, right? And it's just because it's something for that broker that might just be another thing to check off on their lists of things to do. It may not be a specialization for them. It may not be something that they are actually committed to helping you fix a problem, because they're not going to be paid to fix that problem on an ongoing basis. So again, the alignment is off. What most people are looking for is for someone that will help them set and achieve goals. And the real benefit is that movement towards those goals, and ultimately the achievement of those goals that could not, or maybe would not, have been accomplished otherwise.
Yeah, it's the stark difference between people that are essentially paid for how many people they talk to in one day, and then dealing with someone who's made it their job to actually help you implement and achieve all these things.
So I'm going to pull the curtain back even further. And this past week, Cam and I sat down. We took a little bit of time outside of the business to really write down all of the services that we offer and assign values, dollar values, to them the same way that you would if you went to see a fee-for-service advisor, kind of based on the averages that we were seeing out there and based on what we feel our time is worth. I mean, typically, if someone pays me by the hour, I'm asking for $250 an hour for that portion of my time. But what's really important here, and I think what I would hope to see more in the industry and the direction that we're going, is we wanted to create a model where even people that don't meet those asset minimums, even people that have under $100,000 but are really, really motivated to get their house in order and to grow their assets and to have someone that comes alongside them and helps them grow, we created kind of a hybrid model where basically if someone decides to work with us and aligns with us, and there's different services that we provide at different pricing levels, but what we'll do is we'll take a look at the amount that comes from the assets, the servicing fees that we receive from the assets, and we discount it out of the fee for service that would otherwise be provided. And I think that this is kind of the easiest way to give financial planning access to the largest number of people, because at that point in time, what you'll pay is kind of based on what you bring to the table. And it's not just great negotiation of finding someone that's not willing to provide these services or that wants to charge you a lot more for only providing these services. And like I said, for me, the bigger part of it is making sure that I can monitor and I can update any work that I've done for my clients. Because if I write a plan for them and I don't know what the outcome is, that's forever a big question mark. And I worry about those people and I wonder about them. And, you know, I'm the one losing sleep at the end of the day because they kind of went back off into the big wide world and I lost my ability to kind of take care of them and look after them.
Yes, every time a client moves and doesn't give us their forwarding information, Christina has a little bit of the jitters.
A little bit. Hey, it means I care. Come on now. But let's be fair here. So the way that we're looking at it is this. Most independent brokers, and I can't speak to the banking channel because I actually don't know what their commission splits are and how things work there. Most independent brokers, so people like me, like our firm, that are contracted with a number of different carriers, we receive a 1% fee based on the assets under administration, so the amount of money that you have invested with us, that is split between us and our dealer. So that could be our MGA, it could be a dealer relationship. Most brokers aren't getting anywhere near the full 1%, but it is a 1% charge to the client that is going into some split of that broker and whoever their dealer or managing general agency is. Now, when people are looking at funds, so we're talking about segregated funds, mutual funds, ETFs, management fees are what people see. And management fees have a couple components. So that 1% brokerage fee, this is the cost of advice. This is the cost of having a servicing advisor. But beyond that, there are also going to be the costs for paying the fund managers, the taxes, the operating cost, insurance if it's a segregated fund, trading fees, things like that. There will be fund fee costs and management costs that are going to be associated to every single fund. And the MER, the management expense ratio, attempts to bundle everything together and say, this is what it costs to run this fund. This is what it costs to pay the operating expenses of the fund. This is what it costs to pay the fund manager of the fund. And this is what's going to your broker. And you get one number. And that's how over time, like in the mutual fund industry, you can see fees around the 2.5% in the seg fund. They can go high. Some of them are as high as over 3% now. And in the online space, they're lower, right? Like if you DIY, you're stripping out automatically that 1% because you're not paying for the broker services, for the people that should be doing the planning work as compensation for that fee that they receive. And again, I'm separating out that conversation from someone who just takes the fee, pockets it, and you never hear from them again. This is not the realm of that conversation. I understand that happens far too often in our industries, but the good ones will actually do the work to prove the value year over year over year. And that's good for us too, because from a compliance point of view, we can show any regulator that walks in our door that we're still talking to our clients. Yes, we're collecting servicing fees, but we are actively servicing. You know, we're not sitting on the bench here. We're actively in the game for you. So this is where the third point becomes so important if you're talking specifically about your investment. So the first part of the conversation was more about financial planning services. This is more as it pertains to your investments. And this is the ever prevalent conversation about active management and passive management, because it becomes such an important part of the conversation around fees and how much you're going to pay. Now, when you kind of look at what's out there, we've all heard those studies where, you know, you take a monkey, you blindfold him, he throws a dart at a dartboard, and maybe he outperforms some fund managers. On the other hand, you've heard about the rock star fund managers that year over year over year deliver and really do move the needle. And the right answer, as it is for most things in this world, is actually, in my mind anyways, somewhere in between. We've seen more and more of our funds take a component of a fund and use an index to have a low-cost way of covering off that particular need. Now, what that can't do is when you're getting an index, you are locked in to the sector allocation of that index. So any customization or any foresight you might have about the economy and the what the economists are saying and where things are going, that's lost, right? I mean, Cam, you had a great analogy about how indexing is more backward-looking and active management is more forward-looking.
Yes.
That was a perfect segue for you to share that analogy.
Well, it's like what Christine just said about what I said earlier today.
Are you saying I'm stealing all your good points and saying them as if they were my own? That sounds like something I would do.
Yeah, this is what happens when I share all my good stuff before we start recording.
Yeah, this is why he doesn't share his material beforehand, because I try and be witty and funny and it doesn't work.
Yeah, so like what Christine said about what I said, index funds, for the most part, they kind of go off previous returns. They go off of what happened yesterday and just try and you essentially get what happened yesterday with index funds. There is no reallocation going forward unless it's a specialized sort of hybrid model, where on the other hand, active managers, they are trying to predict the future, hedge against it, bet in favor or against it, looking at different sectors that may or may not pop up now or later. And they're trying to essentially get to market before the market does, to try and guess this thing out. So that's kind of one of the bigger differences between active and passive. And different parts of the business cycle, this works differently. Like a couple of years ago, like 2018, 2019, everyone loved ETFs and indexes, and because everything was going good, everything was shooting up, everything was great. There was no like critical problems going on, and active managers fell out of favor until things started getting wonky in 2020 and 2022, when active managers kind of started getting the limelight again for trying to work around the deficiencies in the overall economy.
Yeah. And I think the bottom line for us is the way that we're going to address this is we are realizing that kind of the beginning of the conversation where you just put everyone in the fund in a world that focuses on DIY and doing it yourself, we have to do more as an industry to create that space where you can get the best of both worlds. So, I mean, over at Braun, at my company, at our company, we have added two fintechs, so financial technologies that have much, much, much lower fees than what you'd see. Like one of them, it strips out, if you have over $500,000 to invest, your fee for advice plus the actual fund is like 1.13. And if you don't have 500,000, it was 1.5-ish, give or take, based on the actual selection that you made. But there are ways that kind of people in the industry that are looking to kind of create that compatibility are trying to align the technologies that make these things less expensive with that active advice. And then on these platforms, and I mean, we've got a couple we're going to put on our website in the next couple weeks, but the idea is that anyone without asset minimum, I mean, there are a couple $1,000 asset minimums in some cases, but without a crazy asset minimum, can start accessing services from an advisor while also getting lower fees on their investments. And that will come down to the blend of active versus passive. And we can do that too in our fund selection outside of a fintech.
Yeah, and with these two fintechs that we're going to be working with to actually access both of them, you kind of have to go through an advisor, because that's sort of the whole gimmick is you have your DIY, I pick my fund, this is what I want to do, but then you're still compensating your advisor. Your advisor is going to carry you through your whole retirement, estate, financial plans as you go through. And again, we kind of picked both because one is like a fully passive and one is a bit more of a hybrid depending on which portfolio structure you pick. Well, we kind of want to give people the best amount of options to kind of fit what they want and still have access to our financial planning services.
Well, that's right. And I mean, we never really, really self-promote on this show. We kind of have viewed it more as a chance for us to give you good information. And if you want to find us, you can. And if you don't, you don't.
Yeah, which is also compounded by how many people have been reaching out to us over the last year. And because of that, we've had to kind of get our interprovincial ducks in order. So we're now in BC, we're in Alberta, we're in Saskatchewan, we can help people. We got paperwork sitting on someone's desk in Ontario, in Manitoba, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and Yukon.
And PEI.
And PEI. That's right. That one just came up a couple days ago.
Right. But we are getting more and more requests for services. So we're trying to figure out how to align more carefully with the type of person that wants the best of both worlds and the type of person that may not be coming in with $1 million, but has some plans to grow and to get there one day. And we want to be the kind of people that can help you do that.
Yeah. And judging by how the poll went on Spotify last week, there are a few of you out there.
Yeah. You know what? All of our lives can be better with a little bit of goal planning and goal setting, right? But really, this week for us has been largely about going over our own business model and trying to figure out how we, and by we, I don't necessarily mean me personally. It could be my staff. It could be other advisors that we work with. But people that follow our model, how we can help more people in more areas and kind of distill down these three things. Finding that right financial planner for you, figuring out what the most efficient way for you is to pay them, whether it's a big chunk upfront or through a fee on an ongoing basis, as long as the services align. And finally, deciding with your investments if you want that active, if you want that passive, if you're willing to pay the price either way. And finally, finding a financial planner or finding an organization that will work with you and either discount services so you can still access top-notch financial planning, but they're actually taking into consideration what you're bringing to the table, whether that's very little or a lot, right? And I mean, when we were doing our own modeling, we said, okay, you know what? Someone comes in with $500,000, we can give them pretty close to our whole meal deal, everything, all of our financial planning services free of charge, with a few very small exceptions.
Yeah. And as we kind of help people go through, we are kind of in the fortunate position now where we are dealing with people in the third generation. We're dealing with the grandchildren of clients. Are we able to see our plans and our processes carry through from one generation to the next and still be a benefit to them?
All right. So I think that's enough shameless self-promotion for this week. Hey, you know what? In over 2 years, I think this is the first time we've actually done this. So, and I hope we did it in a way that was actually useful and helpful to you as well, because we come here every week, we turn on the mics, we try and show up for you, we try and add value, we try and build into your life, teach you, educate you. And I hope this is one more tool that you can take to help you find the right person for you as a financial planner, whether or not that's us. I mean, like I said, it's the Wild West out there. There is so much choice, but we are trying so hard at Braun Financial to become the organization that can provide high-level service at fair and reasonable prices and to create a symmetry between these relationships where they're long-term in nature and where things get done. And people at the end of that working relationship, or 2 years in, 3 years in, 5 years in, a lifetime in, say, you know what? I'm further ahead. I got more done because I made that decision to go with Braun Financial all those years ago, or I made that decision to hire that financial planner all those years ago. And that's what my industry is all about. It's all about making sure that you get to the place that you're trying to go, and that we as the professionals make sure that we are the right specialists to help you get there.
And for those of you who do listen, I'll start designing I Listen to Christine plaque you can hang on your wall.
Can I get t-shirts and pens and cups too? You know what? I would also take Christine is the best. Christine is awesome. Christine is the smartest person I've ever talked to. Can we do that? No, only you would wear that t-shirt. No one else would. Okay, to inflate Christine's ego further, please push one.
Yeah, these are the conversations that usually happen offline.
So I think we can call that a wrap for today. Yeah, every week you just get to listen into Cam and I sitting down in front of a mic and having one of the usual chats that we have at any given time throughout our week, just in front of a microphone and in front of some AV equipment. Until next time, take care.
All the best.